Roger Bounds from Monash Energy. Thanks very much to the panel for your views. Could I have your opinion then? Do you anticipate a significant erosion of state powers in the area of environmental regulation arising from the emergence of a national emissions trading scheme?
Who would like to play? Robin?
As with a lot of federal-state relationships, you can anticipate lots of things, but it may not necessarily come to pass. But certainly the NETS group, which is the state-based national emissions trading group that have been working away for the last couple of years, have similar policies, very similar to that the federal government have just announced. So we are hoping that there will be a meeting of the minds and we can have one national emissions trading scheme.
So, Ron? Sorry, Robin, you weren't finished.
You just finished me, Keith.
No, we'll never do such a thing.
No, that's fine.
I think the answer, as far as we're concerned, is we do hope so. Yeah. And we want to see the states get out of this area and just allow one engagement. If we look at New South Wales, for example, they already have an emissions trading scheme of sorts, and that's obvious one area where we would want to have that enfolded into a national scheme. There are other examples that affect us and most probably affect a lot of people in the room as well, such as energy efficiency, and we've got a multitude of mandatory, semi-mandatory and voluntary schemes floating around, and wouldn't it be good if we could actually get some reality into the scheme and just have one national scheme?
Neil and then Andrew.
Just in terms of reporting, and we've talked about this reporting over 32 separate issues, I mean, we've got companies who not only do we have companies operating in all states and territories, we have the same companies operating in different states and territories as well. So one company will have a plethora of reporting arrangements within their own company, and they can't actually put the information together and supply the same information because of the differences in the schemes between the states. So we're hopeful that there will be a harmonisation, and there's a big question on hopeful because the Prime Minister's task force on water doesn't seem to be a particularly encouraging model to get that sort of cooperation between the Commonwealth and the states.
That was last week. Andrew.
Yes, just to finish up on this point, look, I think I certainly agree with the point that Ron made in particular, that we would hope so in the context of the states, and I think that was covered in the points on the number of alternative and cross-cutting policies and programs that the states and territories currently operate. In this sort of on this sort of issue, it really does have to be a coordinated national approach, whether it be through emissions trading, whether it be through the tax regime, however it might be staged, it does have to be national. So there needs to be that national cooperation. It needs to be with the leadership of the Commonwealth, and I think hopefully we are moving in that direction. But can I also say that in terms of the Commonwealth's response, I think there is also a role and a responsibility there for the Commonwealth to ensure that its policy responses are coordinated and it looks at its various other programs in this area, whether it be energy efficiency opportunities or other things like that, to ensure that they do not cut across the sort of mechanism that might be put in place if it's emissions trading operating in conjunction with the tax system.
Thank you, Andrew. I'd just drop one other point on the table, if I may, from my own perspective, and that is I totally agree with my colleagues about the need for it to be national, but it has to be national in such a way that recognises that in the different states of Australia we have quite different supplies of electricity. It's heavily oriented towards gas in the west. It's virtually totally oriented towards brown coal in Victoria. It's hydro in Tasmania. And black coal is dominant in Queensland and New South Wales, but in Queensland, as you would have seen from Santos's recent announcement, we have such an enormous resource in coal seam methane that we are now even in the business of exporting it. So, yes, it has to be national. Yes, it has to be federal in the sense of everybody being able to work across governments to make the thing work nationally. Now, I have not one but two over there on my left. It must be the wine, I think, at that one. Please.
Gareth Parker from the West Australian newspaper. If I could ask the panel, in responding to this problem of climate change, do the panellists feel that there is a danger that Australian industry could be swamped by a new wave of red tape and regulation? And as a corollary to that or a follow-up, has there been any attempts to model the impact of that new wave in terms of a cost to industry or indeed to the economy?
Andrew.
Yes, well, I'll lead off on this one. And I think there is a very real danger on this issue, and we have to be extremely vigilant and we have to be extremely mindful as to what the full costs would be. And that's why I said that if we are going to introduce emissions trading, then it is my strong view that we should look at whether or not that revenue, the revenues arising from that, should be returned to industry, if you like, through reduction of other business taxes, and then we are relying in effect on relative price signals to affect behaviours in relation to consumption of carbon or generation of carbon emissions. But the other point on this, I think, as well, and it comes back to the risk that we will see in what the task force report describes as so-called supporting policies, but I would think in many circumstances they're actually conflicting policies, that we will see the temptation to extend beyond the market-based approach and to introduce other forms of new regulation. Now, in the task group report, they refer specifically in a footnote to on transport to the types of regulations that we've seen proposed in Europe in terms of average vehicle emissions, already in place in the United States through their so-called corporate average fuel economy arrangements, and which the US Senate has recently voted to significantly toughen those requirements. But I think there's a very real danger that we could end up with future governments wanting to go down that track as well. As GM Vice Chairman Bob Lutz has described it, that's like trying to solve the nation's obesity problem by telling clothing manufacturers they are no longer allowed to manufacture large sizes. So I think that's the sort of analogy. We have to be very careful to avoid that sort of outcome.
Thank you, Andrew. Yes, sir. I think you were next.
Ian Nethercoat from Wyang Power. There was a comment that was made earlier on about research and development and the potential costs that are associated with that, and I understand that may impact on various economies and how that might impact on Australia as well. I was wondering if the panel could make a comment in respect to the schemes that are already in place at the moment and perhaps the level of R&D that Australia needs to perhaps put in place to remain perhaps competitive and to project the resources that we've got into what will ultimately perhaps be a global economy, and particularly if we look at issues or the schemes that are in place at the moment that I think are more reliant on industry than perhaps the general public. Do you see a situation where there may be a tax that's imposed just on the general public, which actually does go back to R&D for this particular issue?
Neil?
Thanks, Keith. I'll start off. In terms of our presentation, we acknowledge that we don't believe that just the emissions trading scheme is going to be the answer to all the questions, and so we understand that there's going to be a requirement for an increased investment in R&D. The thing that probably concerns us a little bit is that in terms of enhancing that investment in R&D is that we would really like to see the market determine where that investment money goes into R&D. But I don't think that's going to happen because people will say, oh, well, why don't we provide some greater taxation arrangements for investment in solar, or why don't we provide some greater investment for wind power? And we would really like We understand the necessity for that additional R&D, but we also are a little bit reluctant to support that sort of proposal because that still imposes significant costs on our industry because we're going to be paying for somebody else to guess where we should make that R&D investment. And as I said, if we're going to go down a market-based approach to this, we believe the market should also determine where we should make the best investment in R&D. And sorry, there was a second part of the question which I'll let one of the other panel members answer. Thank you.
Ron?
I just want to add a couple of bits to the R&D issue. The thing I think that a lot of us get concerned about is where governments try and pick winners. We're not into that, and we don't want that to be the issue. I think there have been some good signs of money going into things like the Low Emission Technology Fund, and there's a contest for who gets those funding grants. There's also the fact that Australia can't do all this on their own, or on our own. We do need to rely on some global collaboration, and there is in fact a number of those situations that are already in existence with some of the FutureGen and some of the other coal projects globally. And we would encourage that, but we would most probably want to see a continuation of that funding being taken out of the broader community purse rather than from an emissions trading allocation.
Robin?
Forever an optimist, Robin. I have to say there is and will continue to be some fantastic work done in research and development across a whole raft of industries. And Australia is quite innovative in terms of our constraint that we have with our competitiveness and trying to find some efficiencies. Everybody likes to talk about sexy things like solar and wind and never cement. There is a lot of research done that people don't know about already. Like, for example, you can grow algae. You can pump CO2 into algae. It can grow. You can harvest it on a daily basis, and you can fire it back into the kiln as the energy that runs the kiln. That's a complete closed loop. Aluminium have theirs. The car manufacturers have theirs. We've all got, and pulp and paper, sorry, I've got my colleague here, we've all got some great research and development going on. And that has been a mixture of the government 125, 175, the industries itself putting in, and some of it is global collaboration. So it can only be encouraged to put more money into R&D. It's how you do it, which is what my other colleagues really have articulated.
Thank you, Robin. You've been very patient, sir. Your turn now.
Glad you could see me over here.
Oh.
Okay. I'm Martin Ryan. I'm the Managing Director of the APX, which is a stock exchange just like the ASX. We started trading in carbon emissions last Monday under ACX, and you can see the daily results in the financial review. What we believe is this is the first step to converting what's already happening in the over-the-counter market, which is trading millions of dollars of carbon emissions each week, and transferring it into a transparent and regulated market. Now, emissions trading is not the only one that needs this to happen. A similarly engaged area is in water, and I think many of you would be familiar with what happens in the water market, which again at this stage is an over-the-counter market. The immediate response that we've had, and we're talking only 3 or 4 days of experience, is that small companies are ringing us and saying they want to participate in the market. The larger companies are ringing us and saying, can I look at what happens over the next few weeks before I start participating? What I'm proposing here is that typically what happens that over-the-counter markets do develop. You've got the unlisted property market, you've got the water market, you've got various other ones, you've got MIS. and now Forestry MIS can list on an exchange. And so you've got the development with carbon emissions of over-the-counter markets. I believe its genuine development from there will be to put it on a regulated and transparent market, fully informing both sides so they can trade fairly. And I think you'll find that the market will do this before governments have an opportunity to work out what they think the rules should be. I'd invite your comments on that.
Panel? Ron?
I've certainly got a comment, and it's about markets, and we all support and agree with markets, but we've also got to remember, what are we in this for? We're in this to actually reduce emissions. And markets are one of the tools that we will use to get to that outcome. And it was just the reference to millions of dollars. And we've got a bit of experience from the European issue, where they spent $7.2 billion in markets and trading. But can you tell me how much emissions reduction occurred? And I'll give you a clue. It's a number less than a million. So it was a very expensive exercise. So you need the market, but you've also got to have the infrastructure and the architecture to go with that. And that includes, Robin put a comment before, you've got to have a target. You've also got to have a timeline that is very different to what the Europeans did. The Europeans ran into it with an end point of December 31, 2007, no banking into future periods, and they set allocation levels at such a point that no one had to do anything. All we saw was a lot of shifting of money and no emissions reductions. So we've got to get smarter.